Welcome to the Fantasy NBA Today podcast.
We're doing more strategy stuff here on this delightful Tuesday, 2 weeks from the start of the NBA season. Oh man, I can't believe we made it this far. This is a really long off season. I'm tired. I'm worn. I had to fill a lot of gaps in July and August with weird shows that made no sense, but damn it, I wasn't going to miss a day. And now we're into the stuff that really matters. And I want to try to make sure that I'm introducing today's show in kind of the friendliest of manners, but I didn't sleep very much last night. My kids are yelling at me these days. My wife's yelling at me these days. So I'm all filled with piss and vinegar, and maybe that's for the best. Because right now, there's a deluge of punt stuff on the internet, and a lot of it is kind of backwards. But my guest today on the show is kind of like the OG punt guy, and he knows how to do it no matter what category you're working on. He knows when to zag, when other folks are zigging. Basically, like, a lot of the punt stuff nowadays seems to happen like 2 years too late. 5 years ago, people started really going hard in a punt field goal percent, and by the time everybody picked up on it on Twitter, it was 3 years ago. It's too late. Once everybody's doing it, there's not that much of a point anymore. But good thing for you that I have somebody coming on in about 10 seconds that can help walk us through the right way to do punts, the right order to think about punts, the ones that are coming back into fashion after some time off. They took a sabbatical. And that is Adam Stock. Adam Stock, my buddy from, well, wait, you're deeper into the Pacific Northwest, right? Across the border. What's going on, man?
Yeah, I'm just outside of Vancouver. Hopefully this this rain turns into snow soon. October is usually like 30 days of rain, but then we're also right beside Whistler, so that means like 30 days of snow, hopefully.
Ah, that sounds kind of nice. Yeah, we don't get much snow. We did get, there was one day in Los Angeles last year. It was like a Wednesday in February, and it snowed for like 45 minutes. Didn't stick. But I happened to be doing a baseball play-by-play game that night, and we got hailed on in an outdoor press box. That was not my favorite day. Adam is, of course, for those watching on YouTube, you can see the Twitter handle. For those listening on traditional podcast channels, he had at Adam G. Stock, Elite Fantasy Basketball, and the Punt Meister. So I want to just dive straight into kind of the broad punt idea. Because this is something you've worked on for a very long time. You're analyzing all the different punts, basically, like pretty much nine of them. And you've been able to, because you've been working on it for so many years, track kind of this wave, this sine wave almost, of how they come and go and things get in fashion and stats being scarce or not and how the players get drafted and the order and all that stuff factors into what gets popular. So before we even get into what's going on this year, what has that arc kind of been for punting lately?
Yeah, so like the reason I started my site was there was like a Matt Buser Yahoo article back in the day, and it was the first time I had seen any punting content that wasn't punt free throw. Like obviously punt free throw is like the OG because it was the most obvious, you know. You had Shaq back in the day, then you had Dwight Howard, and then everyone loved Rondo back in the day, and be like Rondo, Dwight, and Josh Smith, and that was like a huge combo back in the day. It was actually not good. It made no sense, but that was like the stone age of it. So we kind of like started moving, I don't know, I feel like it was like punt free throw forever, and then I don't know what it was. Like you kind of touched on it in the intro, like 5 to 10 years ago, everyone's all like, I just want to do small ball teams, you know, and then everyone just did punt field goal percentage, and then all of a sudden there's 6 punt field goal percentage teams in the league. And then, so that was kind of like when I started my site, I was like, yeah, there seems to be an opportunity here. The information out there could be better.
Very diplomatic of you, by the way.
Teams, exactly. It's like, hey, this punt assist thing seems pretty good. And I think just recently we're really starting to like look at other builds. I still have to like scream from the top of the roof, like from the rooftops, like punt threes is pretty good because like 1% of people are going to do it. And everyone's going towards punt field goal percentage, but I feel like we're moving in the right direction. People are at least considering the other ones, especially punt assists. People have been pretty good with punt assists recently too.
So,
but there are more.
going back to one thing you mentioned kind of early on in that answer, what happens if a bunch of teams are all doing the same punt at the same time? Doesn't that crank the difficulty level up to like a billion?
100%. It basically takes away the advantage. Like a mediocre punt field goal percentage team is, which is probably going to be the case if there's five or six guys. Like, I guess you could crush the draft, but I mean, realistically, like your ceiling lowers for sure. It's not going to be better than a well put together punt assist or punt threes team, even in eight cat leagues where punt field goal percentage tends to be king. Although I would argue against that this year because of the rankings. If you're all chasing the same bigs, only like maybe two teams will get like the ideal guys. It might not be you, you know, like punt field goal percentage. You want Victor, you want Jaren Jackson, but you don't really have options in the mid rounds, right? So like if you miss those guys, then what? You know, like you're in trouble.
When do you decide in a draft that it's time to punt? Do you do it going into it? Do you do it when you find out what your draft slot is? Do you do it after the first, second round? Like, is there, or does it fluctuate wildly from a moment to moment, draft to draft basis?
I have an idea going in. I have all my Word documents, like all my different five man combinations. I know I have what is ideal. Like I just prep. I try to avoid surprises, so I know what is realistic and maybe like kind of where the draft is going. I do that for the first few rounds. After that, it's more the Wild West because that's when you get big droppers. But I find the first two rounds are usually pretty predictable, so you can kind of plan it out. But again, I'm pretty flexible. Like I have my ideal, but I'm not locked into that. That's kind of how I approach it.
What is the five-man group?
Just like my first five picks, essentially. Like every build, like you got to think about category scarcity. You got to think about your build's natural strengths and weaknesses. So I kind of have like what, like I want to do if this is my first and second and or first, second and third, you know, kind of set up that decision tree a little bit. So I know if I get maybe not those exact five guys, but those type of players, I go into the second half of the draft in a spot that can like allows me to target the guys in the middle rounds that I want to target and so on.
Okay, so let's think through that arc that you were talking about, because that I think is where a lot of folks are kind of flipping punting right now, where like the guy they take in the first round, they're like, okay, this is the guy I absolutely positively must get in the second round, because they're, you know, let's walk down a path. Like you said, punt threes is what you're screaming from the mountaintop. So let's talk punt threes. How do you? I mean, there are, what, three, four guys in the first round that don't hit a ton of three-pointers. The guy going first in every one of them is one. You've got Shea is an interesting one. I'm trying to think of the right way to phrase this question. Is there a good spot for that in the first, or do you feel like you can do it almost no matter what pick you land in the first round?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. And that kind of like applies to a lot of the builds too. Like I always kind of question the guys who take Luke at second. That's not a move I make. And some of that is because I don't really like the guys in punt free throw percentage at the end of the second, you know, like I like a lot of those elite guards, but most of them are gone by like pick 18 or pick 20 at the latest. And if you grab Luka early, like you might not get those guys. So like Jokic, you can kind of just do whatever. The great part about Jokic is that he brings like the injury prone guys. It's like, give me Jimmy around the turn, you know, but if you're doing it with Embiid, then you probably don't want to go that way, but you can with SGA too. So like with the more injury prone guys, just throw that in there. I would definitely prioritize durability with like your other early round picks. Like fit is nice and everything, but like I would take a slightly worse fit and a more durable guy. For sure.
So like, let's. Sorry, I didn't mean to jump in on you there.
No. Continue.
So let's say you are punting threes. There are. Let's see. So Jokic, Embiid, Shea. If you go deeper into the first, early second round, guys like Anthony Davis. I mean, Kevin Durant actually doesn't hit that.
Durant too. But he's the guy I was going
to
say.
Yeah. So you got some options, kind of top to bottom there. This is the part that sometimes I struggle with as well. In the second round, third round kind of spot. Is that where you are trying to build up specific, like, so head-to-head in Roto, there's a little bit of a different discussion here as well, I think. With head-to-head, you're leaning super hard into six, like, really heavy categories. Roto, you kind of want to make sure that you can get the other eight. So how do you set up the path to all the, harder categories, basically. It's like, if you're punting threes, you're going to be a little bit more of a bigs heavy team by and large. Do you find people fall into a trap of maybe taking bigs too soon, or does it go the other way? How do you work through getting the categories you need in a punt threes, or really a punt anything build?
Yeah. There's two things you got to think about at first. You got to think about the build's natural strengths and weaknesses, because that determines like what your targets are early. Like, yeah, category scarcity, points, assists, free throw percentage, and all that. But that's not necessarily going to be the only categories you have to go early. For example, if you punt points or punt free throw percentage, you got to get hard on threes early too. Like, I know threes is easy to find, but you just have like little room for error in that category. So you kind of just have to look at like the entire draft. Like, you have to plan out the entire draft before.
No problem.
Yeah. Like, you think about all those nice bigs in the middle rounds this year. Like, if you're punting a category where you want to target those guys, so like punt threes or punt assists or something, not necessarily punt field goal percentage, like, you should plan your draft round. Like, those are going to be my bigs. What do I need to do before that to be able to take on those hits? Because those guys like Gafford, Williams, Duran, and stuff like that, those guys come with pretty big hits, you know? So if you're going into that like stage of the draft weak in points or weak in assists or steals and stuff, you can get yourself in trouble. So you got to think about that when you're making your early round picks too.
Is that how you build a lot of the punt idea? Meaning, like, you're looking at who makes the most sense in the fourth, fifth, sixth range, the guys that really do help shore up the strengths, and then think about attacking the weaknesses early? Is that the path, or no?
For me, it's hard to explain. Like, I don't really think like I need this here, I need this here. I just kind of look at like at the whole picture. It's like, how do I get to this point after round eight? You know, like, what are the combinations? That's kind of more how I approach it. It keeps you flexible, and just generally, like, sometimes like the strategy won't be obvious. Sometimes you might think you need to hit these categories in rounds like two and three, but actually you could do it in four and five, and that might be better because it helps this. There's just so many moving pieces. It's hard to get like super specific. You kind of just have to like practice and prep over and over, because for every build, just when to do each thing is going to be a little different. Sorry if I'm being a little vague, but it's complicated.
Yeah, it is. It's extremely complicated. And I thought that was like,
it's not something you really want to wing. I would say, like, if you're new to fantasy, it is definitely something you want to practice beforehand.
Yeah, I should say so. Do mock drafts, do they actually help with this, or does it make it harder because it's easier to get your guys in mock drafts?
Honestly, I don't mock a ton these days. I have a tool on my site, not to pump too much.
Pump away.
But you can test all the different combinations on the fly, so you can like see this five man combination. Where does that put you after round five? You're at five. Move this guy out. So stuff like that just saves a lot of time. It's a lot easier. It's you're not dependent. You don't have to worry about somebody taking Wemby at like eight or something like that and just messing with the
whole board goes to crap.
Yeah, there's too many dummies in mocks to like spend too much time. I mean, you can do what mocks do offline too.
Yeah, we're talking again to Adam Stock, Elite Fantasy Basketball, and what did I call you at the beginning? The Puntmeister? Can I stick?
Meister, sure.
Sure. Yeah, we're rolling there, with that. Yeah. So what punts are, I don't want to say easy and hard, because that's very much the wrong word for it. None of them is all that easy. But which ones are, you think, is the ones that folks, you said threes is a fun one because and you said field goal percent is sort of like a little bit
that's the hardest one, and I feel bad because I know a lot of people are watching, like, that's my default, but it's the hardest one. Like it's the one where you can't get those mid-round bigs that make the draft kind of easy, you know? Like, you have to go big earlier, which is going to lead to issues with your guard categories, and you got to win the guard categories when you punt field goal percentage, and then you got like five other punt field goal percentage teams going, so there's a lot going into it.
And on top of that, turnovers. It seems like everybody's doing it, so that makes it extra hard.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's the bias in fantasy towards points and assists. You don't get extra points for winning either category, but people are hardwired to kind of favor them, you know? Like, even myself, like I have to, sometimes I look at guys, I'm like, actually, this guy's not that good, but he does average 18 points, you know? And, like, I have to just, like, double check, you know? Like,
all right, so what are the ones, in addition to threes, that you think the board is set up nicely for this year?
I usually try to push people away from punt free throw percentage because it's kind of hard. Like, it's good, but it but it's more of an advanced strategy. This year, I'm pushing people towards it, really towards any big man heavy thing, like the threes. Assist is kind of in between, but it's still, I'd say it leans slightly big man. Free throw percentage, steals, but I put that fourth. Just because the bigs in the middle rounds make that setup so easy. You just hammer the guards early, pick up one big maybe over the first five, like Mobley or someone, and then just hammer the bigs in the middle rounds. Like those are fairly straightforward this year. I would say the small ball teams are a little trickier just because Yahoo and ESPN have them so high this year. All the elite little guys.
I'm gonna dig just a tiny bit more on the bigs in the middle round comment.
Yeah.
And I want to see if I can get to the. I'm struggling to come up with the right way to ask this question. You've mentioned them a few times actually in your answers on this show. What is it about that chunk of players in that spot that makes this season unique? It seems like, make sure I'm getting this right, because I'm sort of learning along with the people that are listening too.
Yeah.
Is it because most of those guys, and when you say mid rounds, you're talking about the bigs that are going like around 55 to 70 ish range?
Maybe 90, it depends.
Okay,
yeah.
So it's like starting at Jared Allen, basically, and then going through Nick Claxton, and I guess Walker Kessler's back there with them now as well. Brooke Lopez, Daniel Gafford, Mark Williams,
all the young guys,
Jalen Duren. Is it because those guys are typically low scoring in addition to doing fairly traditional big man stuff that you were talking about, how maybe they don't play into some of the punt field goal, was that the one? I forgot which one you were speaking about.
For the punt field goal percentage comment, those guys aren't ideal fits because when you take away field goal percentage, they don't do much,
The
rebounds and blocks, some of them aren't even blocks, so if you're taking them in six or seven, that's not great value, I don't worry too much about rankings, but I don't really want like a two category player in the sixth round,
Right.
So for punt field goal percentage, that can make it a little tricky. When I bring up those guys, I bring up them because I think they're closer to the early round bigs than the guards in that range are to the early round.
Interesting. Okay.
So that's really what tips it for me. I feel like I'm losing less if I target them in the middle rounds and the guards early. Like there's no real elite guards. I mean, someone will pop up, but like that's predictable from like 55 to 90. But like you can't get a top 35 guy, a guard in a build at like 80, but you might be able to get a top 35 guy who's a big in like punt threes or punt assists in that range.
Ah, okay. So it's that spacing. That's very interesting. Actually, we got a question. I'm going to throw it in there because it was along the same line that I was going to go next. Not necessarily about these guys in particular, but the question is, what do you punt usually for either Halliburton or SGA? And I throw this in there. I do want you to answer this specific question, but I also want to bring up this idea of, if you already have an idea of what you're doing going into a draft, do you avoid a particular player in the first round, maybe even more so than targeting one? So it's sort of a two-part question, and neither one of them is all that easy.
I don't know if I avoid anybody. I just pick like who my favorite is, necessarily like who I think I can do the best job of building around, not necessarily the guy I think is going to finish the highest, who I think is I'm going to be able to build around. That's what it comes down for me. For the guys in question, Halliburton or SGA, SGA is one of the guys I try to be flexible with. Like he works for punt threes, he works for punt assists. You could put him in punt field goal percentage. He's efficient, but field goal percentage was like his fifth best category last year. So you're not really losing too much with him. I usually go into second and third, just kind of seeing who's there and then going from there in terms of punt build. Halliburton's tricky just because of the points. Like it's a pretty big hole to dig yourself out of. So like it'd be easy to say just punt points. And I think if you're an advanced player who's punted a lot of different categories before, or who has punted points before, then I would say punt points. But punt points is really tricky for a beginner guy. So I might look at punt blocks if you don't feel comfortable with punt points. Or you could punt field goal percentage with them too. But I think again, that kind of can lead to trouble just because you'll have some competition. Punt free throw percentage is also an option because like, he shoots a good percentage, but it doesn't get there a ton. So it doesn't have much value tied into it. The problem with that is you're probably going to run into serious problems with points Just because once you take those elite punt free throw percentage big men like Kessler and Claxton, they'll give you like 13 points. You're going to be in a real hole in points. So maybe you end up double punting, and then you've got to make sure you get your threes. So Halliburton's a little tricky, which is why I'm not quite as high on him as other people this year, just because I think he's slightly harder to build around than other guys due to the points.
Do you find that certain punts are easier in head-to-head versus Roto?
Yeah. So Roto, I don't punt that much. Like my rule in Roto is like, if I'm punting, I need to be choosing a build where I think I'm not going to have another serious weakness. You know,
right.
Like I don't need to crush the remaining eight, but like, I don't want to take a three anywhere else. So that usually leads me to punt assists. Basically you figure out the strengths and weaknesses by seeing how the categories correlate to each other. So assist doesn't like strongly correlate with assist doesn't come with like significant weaknesses like field goal percentage can, like field goal percentage, like punting field goal percentage will usually tank your turnovers. It makes it really tough for rebounds and blocks. Assist kind of has some weaknesses. You can usually run into issues with steals specifically, but you're much less likely to run into a double punt, which is what I try to avoid.
Yeah, certainly in Roto. Yeah. What about over on the head-to-head side? I guess the double punt is less of an issue because you could still win 72.
I got no issues with double punts in head-to-head. Sometimes I try to avoid triple punts early in the season. That's something I shift to maybe closer to the playoffs, like especially when you kind of have an idea of who your main competition is, just because I always worry about punting a category unintentionally. So if you're punting one category and you punt a second one unintentionally in head-to-head, who cares? Like that's going to be the case a lot of the time.
Yeah.
If you're doing two and then you punt three, okay, not amazing, but like, okay. But if you punt three and you accidentally punt four, then you're probably dead. So that's why I usually don't gravitate towards to like the crazy punts. I mean, they work in theory, but in practice, not really. Like a guy in one of my leagues last year, punt free throw percentage, didn't really do it well, but he finished second in wins. And he also got ninth in the standings because he couldn't win more than 5-4. So like, so you got to be careful. It could be,
yeah.
And you also got to factor in with those multi punts that you're going to get smoked by injuries at some point. So it you're probably going to take a 2-7 loss at some point, or maybe two. And if you're only winning 5-4 every week, like if that's your ceiling, you're like you're screwed. Like,
yeah, you literally have to do it every week.
Yeah,
every
you
week.
Have to, and it just takes one bad week to wipe out one good month in that setup.
Yeah.
So you want to be a little careful.
I've screwed around with that in the past, you sort of end up in that in like a punt bigs, basically. That's what that 5-4 target is. You gotta nail it. And yeah, if you're one or if your top guy goes down or whatever, and you run into a team that happens to be good at one of the things you were trying to be excellent at, you just get absolutely decimated over one or two weeks, and your whole season at that point can go down the toilet. I have my own question, but we did get one more in the chat room here. Thoughts on Cade Cunningham early third in a punt field goal percent build, or frankly, just Cade overall this year, because there's an expectation of a massive jump happening.
Yeah, he's fine there. Honestly, full disclosure, I took him second last year in a punt field goal percentage team. Worked out terribly. I'm fairly high. I won the league, but like the first like month and a half was like very, very intense.
So he's a great fit for that then.
Yeah, he's a great fit. I mean, as a rookie in punt threes and turnovers, he was like top 35. Like with Cade, you might end up punting turnovers, but that's okay in punt field goal percentage. That's going to be the case a lot of the times. But I mean, like you could take like Fred and two, and then if you pair him with Cade, then your turnovers are probably okay too. So it's not necessarily. But yeah, I have no problem with Cade and three.
Would you go Cade
in
three?
Punt field goal percentage in other builds, iffy.
Yeah, that was going to be my next
question.
Probably
be like top 50 because of the field goal percentage and turnovers overall ranking. Like in Roto, you got to be careful, but in punt field goal percentage, whatever. It's hard to take them too high.
Okay, so going back to the SGA conversation just for a minute here, and I don't want to take up too much more of your time because this conversation is so wide-ranging. We could talk for probably like 3 hours on it today. Okay. We're starting with SGA. I'm getting back into a more specific hypothetical because I think it's easier for people to picture. It's certainly easier for me to like look up into the sky and draw my roster while we're talking about it.
Yeah.
You got SGA in the first round. You are now extraordinary in free throw percent. You're in great shape in scoring. Your steals are very good. Your blocks are actually pretty good for a guard in that one.
Yeah,
but your three most powerful categories are points, steals, and free throw percent. He is, as you've said, a very interesting punt threes guy. You're coming back in the second round. Are you typically, I know you said you kind of have to adjust these things on the fly a little bit, but are you typically looking to build on the things that he's pretty good at that you can then like say, okay, I'm very, very good at five categories now. So like you've got your three basically locked in stone. You could take an assist guy potentially in the second round and turn that into a positive. You could take a blocks guy in the second round and turn that into a positive. You could take a field goal percent. You could take a big, basically, turn that into a positive. Or do you attack the things that are already ultra powerhouse and turn them into basically like 3 to 4 unbeatable categories and build from there? Or is it different on every draft?
Yeah, it's kind of what I was touching on before. I don't really view the second round pick as just like, okay, SGA did this, and then my second round pick has to do this. I basically view the first like five picks as like a group. So it's I honestly view, especially around the, like, let's say you take SGA third, fourth, or whatever, I'm viewing my second round and third round as like complementary pieces. So I'm kind of thinking, okay, if my third round guy is going to be this, my second round guy should be this. So yeah, for me, it's more like the first like handful of rounds. It's like, what does this pick do to get me where I need to be after the first handful of rounds when some of the harder to find categories dry up? That's usually what I'm thinking.
So after five rounds, basically, you're like, head to head, I got to be really, really good in six categories.
Yeah, because I find that's the point, at least this year. Sometimes it's like round six has some good guards, but like this year that seems to be like the cutoff. Like usually, like even guys like Beal and Max are going five now. Six is like starting to get a little iffy. There aren't like any like automatic guys there. Like the top guys are maybe like Vassell and stuff like that. Who's nice and stuff, but I have some reserves because of the Spurs record.
Yeah, Spurs. Because Spurs, that's a fair assessment, by the way, of that. All right, I don't want you to pull the curtain all the way back because people need to come read your stuff a little bit. But give me an example, if you could, like a teaser here, of if you could start your draft with the three players you'd love the most, like first, second, third round, what might that be? And what punt are we looking at? Is it threes?
Yeah, it's through the Jokic done properly breaks fantasy in my main league. Threes with Jokic, won 3 years in a row. It was in first with the COVID shortened league. And then I won it last year with Embiid punt threes. So I'm a big believer in punt threes. So I would say Jokic. Jimmy, even though he makes me nervous, but it's Jokic. And then my guy Bam, who I will put out there, is like, consider him at the end of the second. He is a legitimate end of the second option. Like, he's a very good pick from a category scarcity standpoint because he does good work in the guard categories. One of the few guys in like two or three who is actually like really good in field goal percentage, that helps a lot. So that would be my top three, the two Heat guys and Jokic.
Interesting. So you got a lot of eggs going in that Miami direction.
Yeah, but they're gonna be mediocre probably in the regular season, at least. Who knows?
Yeah,
in the playoffs, they have a good playoff schedule. Bam doesn't rest. I mean, Jimmy. He's annoying.
Yeah, but he'll rest a little. But if they're bad, he can't rest as much.
If he plays 60 plus again, like, I love it. And Jokic plays maybe 68 to 70. Bam plays 70.
What if it wasn't?
Yeah, I would take that every time.
What if it wasn't Jokic? What if you had to start with SGA or Embiid near the top, or even looking like? Well, I did ask you for your favorite, so it's really fair for you to say Jokic. What about second favorite? So second is it SGA favorite or Embiid at in the first?
Yeah, I mean, oh, that's tough. That's my two and three.
Yeah,
like, for sure.
Does it change what you do?
Luke and Haliburton to there, but for me, it's SGA and Embiid. Not that tough.
Does it change what you do in two and three? I know you mentioned with Embiid, you probably try to minimize risk a little bit more.
Not with like, say, Bam or something like that, because Bam can go almost anywhere. But yeah, Jimmy's a no-go for Embiid teams. I'm fine with him with SGA. Like, that's a tricky part with Embiid. I'm finding that part of the draft a little tough just because a lot of the times, like, the guys in the range are a little iffy.
They're all the terrifying old dudes, which for Roto, you're like, nice. Gimme, I got a games cap. Yeah. But in head-to-head, you're kind of like,
how much do we trust Fred, too? Like, it's kind of hard to say. His situation's a little up in the air.
So
like,
do you
can
go,
make arguments on both sides. Yeah, he's got beat up, but now he's playing less minutes. So who knows?
Do you have to go farther down the board if you started with Embiid in that type of build, or do you have to go one of these kind of iffy dudes?
I know. Just like pick your guys. I mean, like, the default rankings aren't perfect. Like,
no,
like,
they're not.
I don't got Devin Booker's like in a ridiculous price that he's not even gonna sniff, but and then people Thank feel you, obligated to take him around. Then you don't have to, you know, like it's the difference between the late second guys and the most of the third round is minimal. There's like no difference between the third round and fourth round this year. Like all those point guards are like the exact same guy with a different twist, you know?
Yeah.
Except sometimes you get 45, the other guy you might take at 31, you know?
Yeah.
So yep. Like, yeah, I wouldn't be afraid to reach. Like, I mean, you put a guy like Bam in a build like punt threes or something like that. And like his ranking like shoots past a lot of those guys at the end of the second.
Are you in this punt threes iteration where you started with Jokic, Jimmy, and Bam, do you end up punting blocks in that build also?
No, because of those mid-round bigs, right?
You okay, just, like, so that's right.
Gafford, Williams. I like Pirtle a ton this year. You got to go heavy on free throw percentage early, but he's a really nice option, especially in friendly builds if he's there in the middle rounds. That's also kind of why I like rolling the dice on Jimmy, because he gives you so much free throw percentage impact that you can kind of like grab that after.
Are you?
But that's also a nice setup for punt blocks. But then, no, I lied. No, you're way too dead in threes. I take that back.
You're way too dead in threes. Do you have to make up ground in points at all in that iteration?
No, because you already got two centers that score over 20, right? So like you should be okay. Like you might be below average in the standings at that point, but like once the other teams start taking their bigs.
Oh, that's when they drop down.
Yeah, but yeah, by like five. Let's say you take DeMar in the fourth.
I do love me some DeMar in the fourth.
Me too. All the time.
Yeah.
So you do that. You get 24 or whatever out of them. Somebody takes Jared Allen or whoever, and boom. Yeah.
Now, do you then lose that ground back again though? Once you're taking your Nick Claxton or your Jakob Poeltl a little bit later, or are you not too worried about?
Yeah, but I feel like everyone else is going to be taking similar guys like that. So
you just got to make up your points ground with a couple of guards in like 4, 5, and 6 range.
Yeah. I feel like you do that and you go guard 4 or 5, like target guys like Beal, Maxey, those dudes, stuff like that. DeMar, Levine, who's really nice. You can make it up. I mean, getting 25 or 24 or 25 out of Jokic out of a center spot is a big advantage.
My last strategic question, and then I officially will let you out of the hot seat. This is something that came up when I was talking to Josh on the show last week. He was like, and I actually kind of agree with this, that we need to change the name punt to something else because it gives this impression that your goal is to F up a category. But in fact, the goal is not to screw up a category. The goal is to get very strong in other ones while not needing to worry about this particular category. Do you agree with that sentiment first?
Yeah, like the proper word is ignore.
Yeah, ignore.
Like outside of the obvious targets, it's like, well, I know this guy. This guy shoots 50 from line. I know he's going to jump. I don't really, like, that's not how I pick out targets.
Right.
Like, I pick out targets for the build based off of what I know the build's strengths and weaknesses are going to be. Like I in punt free throw percentage, for the guards, I'm not really looking at their free throw percentage because they're all pretty good. Like, I don't really care that Fox is, like, a little bad in it and this guard might be good. I'm more worried about their points, assists, and threes.
Covering the things that are harder to
get. Yeah, exactly. From. Covering the weaknesses of the bigs I'm going to go after, yeah.
Do you ever avoid a player who's good at a category you're punting, or is that just too much to think about?
Sometimes. I mean, if they just, like, stink when the category's gone. like those mid-round bigs without field goal percentage are going to stink. I'm never going to punt free throw percentage with Damian Lillard, you know, because then if you're taking him at the end of the first, then he's going to be a top like 30 guy or whatever without that free throw percentage. Like that's bad value.
Yeah.
So, like I'm not getting too crazy with it, you know?
Yeah. Makes total sense. Adam, I'm officially letting you out of the hot seat now. I know we have like I have so many different.
Yeah, we can go on forever. There's like a million combinations.
There are a million combinations and a million different ways to do it. I would strongly suggest that everybody listening or watching give Adam a follow on Twitter at Adam G Stock. Someone did slip a question here at the very end. You got 30 seconds.
Upside versus punting.
Currently in the middle of a dynasty slow draft, when do I target upside value versus punting? This is a very niche question.
Yeah, in dynasty, I definitely go value and like future outlook over fit with punting. I mean, your team could change so much over years. Guys' lines can change so much over years. I wouldn't be going for like specialized picks necessarily. I would be thinking more about overall value.
Pratt says we should call it devaluing a stat better than punt. We may need to just go out into the universe and do a and crowdsource this new name. Ignore works,
yeah,
but. I need something with a little more sauce, a little more pizzazz. But
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, you love those polls. Put out one of those polls.
I do love polls, man. I'm trying to figure out what everybody else is doing, which to me is like the most interesting part of the run up to the season. Because if I could like game plan an entire draft based on what I know everyone else is doing, it sure does make it easier to know where you can get your own guys, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like in those industry drafts, I kind of know what everyone's doing. So I usually come out with like a really nice team just because I know like guys' tendencies and stuff. It's almost like it's even more extreme than like drafting with your home league. Like, yeah, you drafted those guys forever, but you've seen all this content everyone else has put out. So you know exactly what they're going to do. And people like to get fancy in industry drafts too, which can lead to you picking up like value. Like I know nobody wants to pick Tobias Harrison in like industry leagues, but like I will gladly take him if he drops, you know. Like
you and I will battle to the death for these extraordinarily boring players.
Boring guys, yeah, I know, but those are guys that win.
Yeah, Rick Lean I think is in on the boring dudes at times also. Although he goes like he alternates boring and very exciting. I think he's gonna be on. We're trying to figure out a time. He's free in the evening and I'm free in the morning. And at some point we might just have to, I'll do a show with Alex where I just like send a question out and then I'll edit in his answer later on or something.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like people have like called DeMar boring for like 7 years in a row. And he's been a great pick for like 7 years.
He's been amazing.
In a row, you know?
It's been like top 30 since he's been in Chicago. He's top 40 something in San Antonio. Uh-huh. Like it's plug and play, man. The boring dudes. I know I called it the Dan Bespris old man squad, but it is the Dan Bespris boring dude squad. It just doesn't. Anyway, I like that you're on board with this. I also like that that Devin Booker caught astray on today's show because I've been, yeah. I've been clowning on his rank spot for a little bit of time here. Okay, Adam, you're amazing. You're the best. At Adam G. Stug on Twitter. Thank you so much, my man. I will talk to you very soon.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
That was Adam Stock. I love this. So I'm not that great at punting. I'm willing to admit that. I just have this amazing opportunity to learn on the fly while we're talking about it. And so I have 1,000 questions and I have to stop myself in the 30 some odd minute mark or I'll take up Adam's entire morning. Want to remind everybody that this show is brought to you by our buddies over at Manscaped. Use coupon code ETHOS20 to get 20% off your order and free shipping on the brand new Handyman, not a sideburn trimmer, an actual electric razor. Look at this neck. Look at this neck. This was like 3 days ago I used the Handyman, and I still look like I have way better hygiene than I actually do. Isn't that what life is all about when you have children? Because you know you ain't showering for a while. Anyway, if time permits, we'll try to get back later today with another mock draft. It's iffy. Again, it's all based on available time on my end and also do people show up for the mock draft? Because then is that like a four-rounder or are we going to do the whole damn thing? I'd like to do the whole damn thing. I'd like to get to a draft here in the not-too-distant future where I'm able to dig in a bit more on the later parts. But we've been a little bit beset by auto-drafters in the last few as well. I'm trying to think if there's anything that I'm forgetting to talk about today. Oh, Brewski150 is in the all-sport fantasy pass in just 2 days, but the price goes up on that. So there's a double impetus. Get the all-sport fantasy pass today or tomorrow. You lock in the lowest price it will ever be. The B150 goes in it then on the 12th, and that way you get to ride that through. Don't miss the price hike. And get it early. Also, that includes baseball and football premium content. You got football in-season stuff rolling right now. You'll have baseball leading up to the draft after the year, the fantasy draft, I should say, after the year flips over. The all-sport at $7 a month is the best thing we got going over at Sports Ethos right now, and it's not close. It also has projections in it already. You don't even have to wait the 2 days for that. That's at sportsethos.com. Again, big thank you to my guest on this one, Adam Stock. like, rate, subscribe. You guys know all that stuff. I forgot to yell it at you during the show, but here, certainly towards the end, I would say, please, pretty please, take a moment to hit that thumbs up. Take a moment to drop a 5-star on the pod or hit a subscribe button somewhere. And you must, you heard Adam talk about it. Follow me on social media at Dan Vesperus. We got polls going. We got statistical discussions going. We got player discussions going. We got rounds discussions going. And then once the season gets cooking, we got all sorts of crazy stuff going on over there. So that's going to be a wild ride. Thanks again, everybody, for tuning in, especially you live viewers. Love y'all. Maybe see you later today, but at very worst, see you tomorrow.